Good morning. It's April 6th and another day of trying to deal with the coronavirus. And it's kind of a cloudy day in Topeka. It was very cold over the weekend, but it's going to warm up this week. I want to remind people, if they're interested, the meetings are on Zoom. The code is on the site. I hope everybody's doing the best they can in this difficult time, but look, on every situation is an opportunity for spiritual growth. This is a part two, and I'm doing a series on recovery from alcoholism. Before I begin, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you. God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Let me go, help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. As the basis of this series, I'm looking at the thoughts on recovery, the last 74, 5, 6, and 7, but I'm going to use other information and bring in other, from other thoughts. I don't have anything planned. This is all kind of off the top of my head, and I hope it helps somebody out there. We ended last week. We talked on the first podcast about living in the world that I created, living in the wrong world, living in conscious separation from God. And that's my real problem. And we ended that by looking at complete surrender, that I don't want to live in that world anymore, and move away from myself to God. And I think one of the thoughts I had is I wrote a thought on, do I have the power to choose not to drink today? And the reason I bring that up, because when I'm in my world, I never have any power to choose not to drink, ever. And I ask people at meetings, I say, well, who has the power not to drink today? And everybody looks at me and kind of wondering what the heck I'm saying, and they raise their hand. And what I mean is I'm a real alcoholic, and I've lost the power to choose to drink forever. And I never have the power to choose, ever. And so that is part of that leading me to experience the pain and the suffering and the hopelessness of defeat, that I know I have no way to fix this on my own. And I have to remember I never will. And so I remember Mark Houston said, each day I make the choice to seek the power which gives me choice. I have no power of my own. And that's what the first step needs to lead me to do the rest of my life, to admit. And the surrender has to be that I have any power to keep from drinking, or I have any power to manage my life successfully. And a lot of people feel that when they come in, but they don't understand it in those terms. They just know things are going badly. And so through the spiritual exercises of the steps, we move from the world where I was living, consciously separated, to living in the world of conscious contact. And when I'm in the world of conscious contact, then I have the power in that world with God to choose not to drink. But when I leave that world, if I get back in my own world, I don't have power. So each day is a day when I try to stay in the world of that spirit. And I can't ever forget that. And it says, you know, alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. There's one who has all power, that is God. May you find him now. And no human power can relieve my alcoholism. And we say, God can and will if I seek him. So the question has to do with each day understanding my brokenness and my inability to have any power to manage my life and to have any power not to drink. What am I doing each day to keep the relationship with my higher power? And ask yourself, what do you do every day? And do you pray and meditate? Are you taking inventory? Have you worked steps 4 through 9 and trying to live in 10 and 11? And am I practicing love and tolerance? Am I thinking of what I can do for others? Do I carry a vision of God's will in all of our activities? And what are we doing on a daily basis? Because if we don't keep doing those things, we're going to get back into that world where I was hopeless and futile. And I don't want to do that. So when talking about complete surrender, I have to understand what that means, to completely surrender, to move out of that world. And it can't be an intellectual decision. It has to be through the heart. And so I thought I would talk a little bit about the first step of recovery. And not the first of the steps of the program, but the first step in recovery, which is what I have to do to be able to understand that I have to leave this world I created and move into a different world. And I think the first step of recovery is in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 30. My book's so marked up I can't even see the page numbers now, but you know, I'm used to it, so I'll get a new one when this one actually falls apart. It said, just reading the beginning, most people are unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics, and the idea that somehow, someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astounding. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Now, those are people who can never see that they have to move out of that world, their self-centered world. They can never see it. They have this illusion. It persists. But then it says they learn, the ones who had recovered, who wrote this book, their testimony, that they learned that they had to fully concede to their innermost selves that they're alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. Fully concede to my innermost selves that I'm an alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that I'm like other people has to be smashed. And then they talk in that chapter about inability to control and loss of power of choice. So what does it mean to fully concede, fully yield, complete surrender? I have to fully concede, which means surrender, that I'm an alcoholic and my innermost selves, and then I have to know what makes me an alcoholic. And when I see a lot of new people, I always ask new people when they come to the meeting, we sit down and I say, well, you've been to treatment, well, you said you're an alcoholic, what makes you an alcoholic? And most people, I get very, very varied answers. But what does make me an alcoholic? Well, the first thing is that I can't control drink once I have it in my body. So that's one of the things that helps me realize my powerlessness in my self-centered world. The second thing is that I can't bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of a moment a week or an hour ago of defeat. And I can't bring that into consciousness to keep me from taking the first drink. So I have no power not to drink. I have no power against the obsession of the mind. I have no willpower to keep me from drinking. And so that makes me powerless, because I have to understand that I'm powerless completely powerless to move out of this, begin to take the steps to move to step two. Because step two is about seeking the power. We're going to talk about that. But step one is understanding complete powerlessness. And what's the third thing that makes me an alcoholic? Is that I can't live sober in the world without having the obsession to drink. And I can't live sober in the world because I don't have a relationship with God and I have a spiritual illness. So we have a three-part illness, mind, body, and spirit. And it's the spiritual illness that I really have to see that makes me powerless. And the spiritual illness is manifested by my making my life unmanageable and seeing the unmanageability of my life. And when I can do that, then I can see the relationship between that and alcohol. The hyphen on the first step has to be two parts: powerless over alcohol, powerless to manage my life. Fully concede that. The delusion that we're like other, this is the first step in recovery. And nothing else will go on until I understand that. The delusion that look like we're other people or presently has to be smashed. So I have to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm powerless over alcohol. And until I take that first step, I can't work the rest of the steps. And that's one of the reasons why the doctor's opinion is the first chapter in the big book. Because he explained to Bill W. what his problem was. And remember, Dr. Bob couldn't stop drinking because he didn't know what his problem was. And the doctor told Bill what his problem was, that he couldn't control his drinking, he had an allergy, and he had an obsession of the mind to seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. And Bill had that knowledge, but he didn't have any power in his life to change that. Self-knowledge, he says, did not work. Fear did not work. It wasn't until he met Abby Thatcher and had the spiritual program of recovery presented to him, and he began to work the steps, that he began to get power in his life. And so that's why they take 57 pages, or 43 pages, excuse me, and doctor's opinion to convince us that we're powerless, not only over alcohol, but managing our own lives. And so they found that unless somebody, that's why when Dr. Bob would go to new people, he'd ask them, are you done? Are you done for good? And so what he wanted to know is, were you completely defeated? Have you given up any plan you had to keep from drinking? Because any plan I had to keep from drinking would keep me from working their plan. And nobody really wanted my plan when I came in. And so I wrote on fully concede. The definition of concede is to admit that something is true or valid after first denying or resisting it. And, you know, I had seen in others and myself alcoholic behavior was exhibited long before fully conceding it. We were alcoholics for a long time before we were crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, and we had to face the proposition that God is everything or nothing. Isn't that really the moment of complete defeat? Crushed by a self-imposed crisis, and I had to see that I was the one who caused it. And I think fully concede is to hit bottom. We talk about hitting bottom. And hitting bottom is the point where I reach where I can no longer deny the truth about my situation. And it's a gift, that moment of complete defeat. And it can't be circumstances outside. It can't be the DUI or losing the job, because circumstances can keep getting worse. It has to be the inner circumstances that you completely give up on yourself as having any power or plan to fix your situation. And remember, when you surrender, you begin to get power. And so the reality of the situation is to be constitutionally capable of being honest about yourself. And a lot of people never get it. And I wrote, to concede to my innermost self is to admit my heart and soul, not intellectually, but emotionally, with complete acknowledgement that it will never change. That's why I started out, I'll never have the power to choose the drink today. And I have to seek that power, and I have to know that every day. I have to wake up every morning and say, you know, I need God's help today. I can't do it. And it has to be complete surrender to the truth. So until you see the truth, you can't surrender. That's why step four is so important, because you see the truth about your thinking and you can't live on the lie anymore. And so I wrote, it's unconditional surrender. And it has to be unconditional, and then you have to maintain that state of unconditional surrender. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I surrendered, but I don't believe that for me. I was surrendered. Surrender wasn't a choice. Surrender was a situation I had to accept. And I had to see that the guns were all pointed, and that they were pointed, and they were never going away. Now, I put down the gun after I saw that I was completely surrounded and there was no hope for me. I didn't wake up and say, I'm going to surrender today, because I surrendered because of the situation that I could not get out of. It's a gift. I don't know if that makes any sense. And so that's the thing. You can tell if somebody's surrendered and completely defeated by what they're willing to do and the change in their attitude. And I've heard people say the example of unconditional surrender is that famous footage that you can see on newsreels, and I'm old, so I remember seeing it. But the day of the Japanese went to the aircraft carrier, and they had all the MacArthur and his assistant commanders and all on the deck of this aircraft carrier, and the Japanese leaders came with their top hats and their tuxedos, and they're on the ship, and they sit at this big table, and the Japanese MacArthur gives the Japanese the surrender papers, the leader, the guy who's going to sign it. So the Japanese leader goes to put his hand in his pocket to pull out his glasses. And MacArthur touches his hand and he says, you don't need to read this. You just need to sign it. This is complete unconditional surrender. And you have to make that every day. I have to do that every day for the rest of my life. And I still remember Chuck C. saying, 15 years sober, and he's sitting in his chair looking out in the Pacific, and he said, damn, I have to surrender every day completely. I have to see that the guns are all pointed at me all the time and just give up. And isn't that what we're really doing? Giving up managing my life, giving up my self-will, giving everything to God, carrying a vision of God's will, being of service to Him and others, getting out of self. And some days we do it better. And I heard someone say that if I'm powerless over alcohol, then alcohol has power over me. And I have no power over it. So I need a power in my life that's greater than alcohol, and it has to be God. And that made a lot of sense to me. So no God in your life, no power over alcohol. People come in, they don't want to hear about God, have a party. What can you say? Can't argue with them. And I've always wondered that. Why don't they want to hear about God? Well, because they don't want to stop believing that they're in charge of their lives. They may not consciously be aware of that, but that's what they're really saying. And so, and the other thing I wanted to mention about being in the world of the Michael's world is that Somebody talked about alcoholism is a disease of perception. And why did they say that? How does that have to do with conscious separation? Well, when I'm consciously separated from God, I see things wrong. And I don't like the way I see it. And so I don't like reality. So I want to change it. And I change it through a substance. Some people use drugs, some people use alcohol. But what they're doing is they're changing the perception of reality. Now, if I could deal with reality without having to drink or use, then I wouldn't have the obsession to drink. So AA is a program of recovery to help me deal with reality and do it with God. The reality never changes, it is what it is. But I change how I react to it. That's why the promises seem so powerful, because that's how we can deal with reality with God. Now, if you take the promises and you read it and you put alcohol instead of the promises, then you see what alcohol did for you. So it changes, alcohol changes the way I see things. And I mentioned that if I'm in that world of the spirit, I'm always going to be restless, irritable, discontented. And I'm going to want to change the way things are. Now, I try to change it with behavior. And then that causes more harmful actions and more shame and guilt. Or I have more fear and I act on the fear. And so I think that explains why when you're in a self-centered world, you see things through your self-centered eyes. And you'll always be vulnerable to changing the way you feel. And if you haven't worked the steps and you don't have the spiritual kit of tools, then you won't be able to change that. Remember, alcoholism is a unique disease. It's a disease that it says only a spiritual experience can conquer, and that's why. Because only a spiritual disease, only a spiritual experience can move me out of my self-centered life into experience the real world with God. And then when I see things, I react differently with God than I did before. And it says that several times in the big book. And you have to have a spiritual life dash or else. And so that's, I thought I would add that to some of the things I said on part one about the complete surrender. And now I want to look up a little bit part on step two. So after seeing that I was powerless over alcohol, my life was unmanageable, the pain, the fear, the sense of desperation, the complete defeat, the unwilling to go on the way it was, willing to go to any length to change, that I was brought to the place where I was willing to change. And until I'm brought to the point where I'm willing to change, I'm not going to change. And remember, the process of recovery is really simple. We have to be willing to change, and then I have to believe I can change, and then I have to decide to change, and then I have to take the actions to change, and then I have faith and trust that I'm changed. And so step one, that's why it's so powerful. It has to be taken 100%, because I have to be willing to change forever. And I have to maintain that sense of complete defeat. I have to remember that all the time. I never want to forget the moment. So once you hit complete defeat and of yourself, you have to look in another direction for help. And my way could never work. And AA is really saying, when you come here, the first 40, 50 pages, if your life is an effing mess and you can't stop drinking, we have a plan that'll work for you. But until you're convinced that your plan is never going to work, you won't do the plan in the book. And they say, we can't tell you if it'll work for you or not, but we could tell you in our experience it worked for us. So if you don't have a plan that works, you might want to try our plan. It's only when we completely give up in step one that we're willing to do the plan. So I had to look, I had to step out of my thinking and look in another direction. And this is the beginning of what's called in scripture repentance, which is misunderstood, the seeing my brokenness, seeing my inability to manage my life and to quit drinking, and I had to turn away from it. And the beginning is that moment of complete defeat. And just the fact of doing that, Dr. Thibault said, you're no longer typically alcoholic. Once you begin to give up completely on yourself, and you're turning yourself away from yourself to be the narcissistic, omnipotent person, to accepting strength, direction, and guidance from another source, you're no longer typically alcoholic. And then you have to continue that process for the rest of your life. And so we have a whole chapter called We Agnostics, a whole chapter, because it ends page 43, the last paragraph gets us ready for step two. And it says, it's pretty subtle. They go through the examples of Fred and Jim and the jaywalker and the man of 30. And they end it with, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither does he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. It's a very nice way of saying you're screwed and you better find a different way and you need to find God. But they're very nice about it. And so the next chapter says we agnostic, those without knowledge of God, those who have no knowledge of God. It doesn't mean they didn't believe in God or pray to God, but they never allowed God to work in their life so that they could feel his power. And they could realize that God could do for them what they could not do for themselves because they never allowed him. And I didn't understand that until I listened to Joe and Charlie. And so step two is so powerful because we're willing to move away from ourselves and our God of reason, and we're willing to move to the shore of faith. We're willing to see a different way. We're willing to let go of our old ideas. We're willing to let go of our prejudice. And if you haven't listened and studied We Agnostics, I have gone through it several times on the site. You just go to the menu episodes and go down to the bottom, scroll all the way down to that yellow box, and you'll see We Agnostics and click on it. It's a powerful chapter. And so they're talking about the willingness to change led to the belief that there's a power greater than myself that could do this for me. Now they give all these arguments in there why you don't want to believe that and why people don't want to believe that. And then they start to give you arguments why, how could you not believe that there's a power greater than you? And that they say the road to God is broad, all-inclusive, not exclusive to those who truly seek him. And all we have to do is be willing to change and willing to believe. And so on page 45, they talk about lack of power, and that's our problem. And the power greater than myself will solve my problem, which is my conscious separation. And so they're going to talk about God. And then they tell you that all you need to do to be able to start down the road is lay aside your prejudice, your prejudgment, and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than yourself. And you commence to get results. Although it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. That's from page 46. And they also say that you don't have to consider another conception of God, just your own. However inadequate was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. You're beginning the process of moving out of that world, your self-centered world, to a different world where God exists and where he can guide and he can direct me. And then it says, we found that God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. The realm of the spirit is all-inclusive, never exclusive, forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. What a powerful statement. And they say that in the beginning, for step two, all you need to begin spiritual growth is to not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms or God deter you from honestly asking him what they mean to you. And at the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect my first conscious relationship with God as we understood it. So the beginning of my first conscious contact is willing to believe that there is a God and willing to move out of my world where there was no God, where I played God, to this other world. And whatever your conception is, no matter how limited, you have to start. Now later on page 80-something, it talks about our conception of God. It says it has to be a conception that makes sense to you. I think it's in working with others. And so we don't tell anybody how to, what they have to believe. It just has to be a power greater than you that makes sense to you. And I heard somebody say, it's on page 93, and it says, while you're telling the person how you got well, they'll ask you a question, you know, and you tell them exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature. And isn't that what the big book's doing? It's telling you, the reader, exactly what happened to them. And it says, whether he be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. It has to make sense. People would talk about the doorknob, or I've heard people talk about the fellowship. And he talks about that in the 12 and 12 too. Make the fellowship your higher power. Well, have you ever been to a meeting and listened to a lot of people talk and they have no relationship with God? And I think what he's saying is make it AA, make it the meetings, make it your sponsor, make it something greater than yourself. But eventually it has to be God. And you can choose any conception like, provided it makes sense. I mean, I heard something say that it has to be something that you can go to at 3 a.m. and you can talk and go to this conception of God and ask for help and have a relationship with it. And they write here in 93, the main thing is he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself. And that's the beginning. And then to maintain it, that I live by the spiritual principles of that higher power. So if I just believe, that won't change me. I have to live by the spiritual principles. And that's what this book's all about. And so now we've come to this point where we put the foundation of our arch to freedom, the willingness to change based upon our powerlessness and the pain and suffering and humiliation and defeat of managing my life and of alcoholism. And now we're willing to take the second step and put in the cornerstone of this arch to freedom. And that's on page 47 in the big book, the step two question. Here's step two in the big book. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Just ask yourself this question. Ask yourself now. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? That's it. Am I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than me? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, here's the promise. We emphatically assure you that you're on your way. and it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And they're talking about the arch to freedom. The foundation of that arch is willingness, step one. The cornerstone is step two, believing that you can change. The keystone of this arch is the belief and the decision that you're not going to play God and you're going to let God direct your life and you have a new employer and you work for God, and then the rest of the arch is put in through the steps 4 through 12. And so that's where you begin, and they say, they make the point here that that people assume they could not make use of spiritual principles in life. We accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. And what they're saying here, that all we have to do is be willing to believe. We don't have to accept anything more than that to begin the journey. And then the way the steps work, at least for me, and described in the book, is God reveals himself to us as we move away from ourselves. And as we seek him, more gets revealed. And so that's step two, where you're beginning. You've reached the point where you're willing to move out of your world to a new world, to conscious contact. You don't want to be consciously separated. You've surrendered and made a decision that you don't want that to happen. And that's very powerful. So you really, we talk about doing step three and doing a thorough step three, but you can't really do a step three till you've done a very thorough step one in your heart and soul and can see it to your innermost selves that you're done. You have no plan, no way to fix any of this. And you become willing to believe that there is a power that can do this. Now, I remember I believed that if I went to AA that they had a power. That's why we have to make sure that our meetings are attractive to people, that we let them know we have a solution, because the new person who comes here has to see that there's a place of hope, the beginning of hope, and that we have a message of hope in this big book. And we have to be willing to take them one-on-one when we see a new person, meet with them, talk to them, tell them about our experience and the program of recovery if they want it for them, and see if they have what we have. And if they have, tell them we have a solution that'll work for them. So I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to pick up with step three, the next talk on recovery from alcoholism. And I hope this is helpful, and I hope everybody stays safe and well as best we can in this difficult time. Have a blessed day. Thank you.